This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Good grief, is it that time of week already? 6 minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, a little later than usual, so once again, the pedants among you will point out, how can it be Mystery Hour? It's already 12.07. You're going to hand over to Sheila at 12.59, that's Mystery 52 minutes. Then you've got the commercial breaks to knock off, that's probably Mystery 50 minutes, just doesn't have the ring to it. Anyway, we've printed all the board games now, so we've got to call it Mystery Hour, and we will continue to do so. Gratifyingly for me, but annoyingly for you, the switchboard is already full, but I hadn't even mentioned it was Mystery Hour in the run-up to the last 12 o'clock junction to the news. But some of these callers, no offence, will be rubbish, which means that they will be dispatched with a polite flea in their ear in the next moments, freeing up a phone line for you to ring in. So judicious use of redial is generally the way forward if you want to get on air. And if you hear somebody else ring in with a question to which you know the answer, then you have to ring in and answer it, otherwise you get disqualified. The competition to win a Mystery Hour board game is currently not on, not open, because it's a proper grown-up competition with terms and conditions and everything, and I haven't checked whether or not it has been renewed for the new year. So I don't think we'll be giving one away this week, but hopefully that feature will be reinstalled next week. Anyway, so many people got one for Christmas, including my earlier correspondent who got three. Maybe we'll get in touch with him, ask him if he can give one of the three Mystery Apple case that he got to this week's most popular contributor. But if you're not familiar with this feature, then you just have a little mystery bubbling away in the back of your brain. Who, why, what, where, when, what happened, what resulted, even the occasional wherefore. Whither? Whence? Someone else listening rings in with the answer. Sounds quite boring and straightforward. It's none of those things. It's fascinating and often hilarious. No, it's hilarious and often fascinating. It's often hilarious and it's often fascinating. But it all depends on you. The only real rule left is this one. You're not allowed to look anything up. So if someone asks a question, you think, oh, I'll just Google it. Or I'll phone... Can you phone people? Yeah, you can phone people. Yeah, you can. You can phone your... Yeah, you can phone... Why have I made it all so complicated? It's supposed to be my easiest hour of the week, this. But you can't look anything up. You can't Google it. You can't reference it. But if you've looked it up in the past, so if you were watching telly last night and somebody said something and you thought, I'll just check that. That seems quite interesting. I'd say, where's that then? Sackville Gardens in Manchester. Who's that named after? And you looked it up yesterday, then that's fine. But you can't look it up as a direct response to today's question. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. I think that's it, really. Should we just crack on, see how we get on? Yeah. Gavin's in Southend. Gavin, question or answer?
I've got a question for you, James.
Carry on, Gavin.
Okay, so this is a question born really by the family of my children who loved playing your game over Christmas. Fantastic. I mean, it was a focal point. So
glad to hear it. Really glad to hear it, actually. But
No, actually really good. And it was great to interact with them at a more adult level. So, thank you very much.
I got a lot of that with my nephews as well. It kind of involves them. But anyway, enough of that. It's brilliant. Let's just take that as read.
Absolutely. So, yes, the question is, would someone with a nut allergy be able to eat the meat of a squirrel?
I like this. I mean, my amateurish answer, as someone who has actually eaten a squirrel on live television, my amateur answer to this would be yes. Because you know, nothing would get into the squirrel it would all be washed out. It would all come out in the wash, wouldn't it? It would all come out in the butchering process.
Exactly. And where's the parameters there? Where does it start? Where does it stop? Where's your allergy start? Where's the meat start? I don't know.
But why just a squirrel? Why just because we associate squirrels with nuts? I mean, pigs eat nuts as well. So there's all sorts of... There's all sorts of... all sorts of animals could hoover up a nut, couldn't they? And then end up on your dinner table without... I've never heard of any nut allergy being triggered by something that wasn't actually a nut, but was a formerly living thing what consumed a nut.
Yes. They just eat nuts or pretty much whole
They eat so many nuts. They've got really nutty meat. is what we're thinking, isn't it?
I would love to have the question answered. My kids would love to have that question
answered. Well, we will do our best for your kids. I'm just trying to think who'd be best qualified to answer that question. It's a rare area of expertise, isn't it? Is not
it's niche.
Niche is the word, Gavin. Niche is the word. If you have a nut allergy, and you, what's the guidance on eating squirrels? Is I guess, one way into it. 0345 606 0973. It was the rather brilliant Guardian journalist and environmental campaigner, George Monbiot, who prepared a squirrel for me to eat in my television presenting days. Quite an odd experience. Tastes a lot like chicken. No one will be surprised to hear. Christoph is in Wembley Park. Christoph, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
Why was Queen Victoria known as the Empress of India? In fact, I think that was a title that she had.
Yeah.
Why wasn't she just called Empress Victoria, considering that, you know, Britain had an empire at the time? And I think, by the way, the four kings that came after her, Edward George, I think they were called Emperor of India until India became independent. So why weren't they called Emperor Edward?
Because the relationship between the monarch and the United Kingdom is not imperial. So the England's not part of the empire.
How does that differ from the relationship between the Japanese emperor and, because he's a monarch, right? The Japanese.
Well, hang on a minute. That's their choice. I think that we didn't talk about the empire until we got it. So you can't retrospectively rebrand the monarch as an emperor.
I suppose.
I bet that's it. I know I'm not sounding at my most persuasive.
When it comes down to it, I'm not sure I know the difference between a king and an emperor.
Well, there isn't one, I don't think. It's like Kaiser. I mean,
why is she called Queen of India?
Czar.
Then?
Well, I don't know. You can't start evolving the question once you're live on the radio. why? I mean, I think
I had to because you tried to answer it.
I didn't try to answer it. I successfully answered it, I think, but just not with any qualifications or proof at the minute. So why was she called the Empress of India and not just called the Empress of everywhere?
Well, everywhere that she walked, she...
I think because she... No, because we had kings and queens. We didn't have emperors. And so just as we got more land, she can't be the Queen of India. Well, actually, no. Why wasn't she the Queen of India then?
Yeah, thank you, James. You've asked my question.
Empress of India. Why was Queen Victoria the Empress of India? I think you can understand the question without necessarily having it perfectly articulated by me. So Queen Victoria, Empress of India. Why wasn't she just Empress Victoria or Queen of India? 12:14 is the time. John's in Bournemouth. John, question or answer?
Oh, hello. There's a question.
Carry on, John.
I've just come from a doctor's appointment.
I'm sorry to hear that. Is everything all right?
During which I happened to say to the nurse, I haven't had a cold for 15 years.
Good
touch
Lord.
Wood.
Oh, well done.
Touch wood.
Yes.
And apart from there wasn't any wood to touch, why do we say touch wood? It's not going to stop me getting a cold, is it? Why do we say touch wood to avoid bad luck?
There's millions of answers to this, you know. It's come up before on Mystery Hour, and I don't think there is a definitive one. The wood of the cross is one of the theories. You touch the wood of the cross, so it was a kind of Christian thing. But before that, as with lots of things, there's a pagan one as well what is it? Is it spirits lived in the wood? So, you know, that there'd be a spirit in the wood that you were asking for help or asking for support with your luck.
Yeah.
But I'll leave it on the board in case anyone wants to have a crack at a definitive answer. But you may be touch wood, John. Someone will know the answer to this. But you may be disappointed because I think it is so old and so entrenched in our traditions and our culture that nobody's 100% sure where it started.
Well, that's why I asked the question.
I know it is. That's why I'm touching wood that I can get you an answer. And I'm glad that the doctor's visit went okay as well. It's a nice counterpoint to some of the previous... some of the calls in the previous hour. John, thank you very much. 12:15 is the time. Origins of Touchwood. Why was Queen Victoria the Empress of India, but the Queen of England? Can you eat squirrels if you've got a nut allergy? That's a lovely question, isn't it? It's 12:15.
Find the workout for you with £270 off the Peloton Bike Plus and try a climb ride with Bradley.
3, 2, 1, let's go!
Or a strength class with Ben.
You're crushing this here.
or go for it with a hip-hop ride with Hannah.
Push, push, push! Let's go, Peloton!
Visit onepeloton.co.uk and get £270 off the Peloton Bike Plus today. Offer ends 9th of January. One offer per unit purchase cannot be combined with other offers. Internet connection and Peloton all-access membership for £39 a month required. Terms apply.
It is 12:18 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. Quick shout for the Camden New Journal, excellent local newspaper up in North London, but featuring this week a little column from a journalist called Harry Taylor, examining the chances of Kidderminster Harriers getting a result against Reading on Saturday. Don't ask me how he's ended up doing that, but it cheered me up a moment ago to see it. Come on, you Reds. 19 after 12 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour. Mark's in North Adderton. Mark, question or answer?
Hi, James. Question, please.
Carry on.
This might sound a bit of a silly question, but are spiders scared of conkers?
They're not scared of conkers. They're not, but there is
maybe,
a gas.
Maybe a better way would be, are they repelled?
Yes, they are. There is a gas released by horse chestnuts, which...
Is there?
Yeah, which spiders have a problem with.
Ah.
The problem that I've got now, Mark, is having played the Mystery Hour board game a lot over Christmas and remembering this one from previous.
Oh, is this from the board game?
I don't know. It probably is. But what I found when I was playing the board game was that I remember really clearly things that have come up on the programme, but that doesn't mean they're right. So I always voted for the stuff I remembered, and it often turned out to be wrong. And I think I might have just done it again. I think I remember someone ringing in and saying, oh, yes, conkers release noxious substances which repel spiders. And that is why you are advised, if you have a problem with spiders, to put conkers around your doorways or what have you. And then 20 minutes later, someone else rang in and said, James, that's a load of old rubbish. And I forgot the bit about someone else ringing in to say, James, that's a load of old rubbish, and have burnt in my memory the idea that conkers somehow release... Because they are quite smelly, aren't they, conkers? And you remember when you were a kid and you licked one? You licked the inside of one and it was really nasty. And I mean, do not eat conkers, kids. Seriously, crikey.
I played conkers. I can't say I ever licked them, though.
Did you not? Did you? No? Not ever? Because you can eat chestnut. You've eaten a chestnut. You've eaten a chestnut.
Yeah.
So you'd think, as a kid, oh, I wonder what horse chestnuts are like. And then, oh, well, that's why we don't eat horse chestnuts. They're absolutely gross. But they have quite a distinctive aroma, especially when you smash. You weren't good enough at conkers, mate. That's your problem. So you never smashed anybody else's open and then licked it as a sort of form of victory dance. So that I'll leave it on the board. But I don't. Do conkers keep spiders away? Is the question we're going to
ask. Yeah, that's all right.
You're wrong.
Yeah. I was told it a couple of months ago, and I thought, is that real?
Have you tried it? Have you tested it yourself?
To be honest, I did. Yeah. And you know those big, you know, you get those big, horrible house spiders. Yes. And we'd had a couple early autumn. Now, I put conkers around the house, and I haven't seen any since. And I just thought,
correlation is not causation, is it? So can we get some sort of scientific justification for this belief that conkers can somehow repair? Lovely question. Thank you, Mark. Conkers and spiders. Cheers, mate. Touch wood. Empress of India, squirrels and nuts. That's quite conkers and spiders, squirrels and nuts is a theme emerging here. Jeff's in Leeds. Jeff, question or answer?
Hey, James, answer, please.
Carry on, Jeff.
So, your squirrel and nut allergy problem.
Yes.
So, when a squirrel digests nuts, the nuts are going to be broken down. The protein is what you're allergic to in the nuts. So the protein would be broken down into the component and amino acids.
Right.
So thus, no longer causing that allergy. So the amino acids would then be used by the squirrels to develop muscles, etc. So you're not eating the protein that's in the acorn, which is the nut.
Yeah. There it is. Qualifications?
But I'm a 10 years graduate biology, postgraduate. So I think it was marine biology originally. So it doesn't really involve squirrels, but some transferable knowledge.
Are you related to? Are you allergic to nuts?
I'm allergic to egg.
You're allergic to eggs.
I'm allergic to the protein in the yolk.
But so same question then. If a creature is eating an egg, you're not going to have any problem eating that creature.
Yeah. So basically, when you're eating that, when you digest any food, you break the proteins down into the amino acids. You're not allergic to the amino acids. You're allergic to the protein. So you're not actually digesting the protein.
No, I understood. I was just applying the theory to eggs as well as to nuts, just to drive it home for people who aren't as scientifically minded as me and you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Or you, anyway. Round of applause.
Cheers, thank you very
much. Nice work, Jeff. There you go. So, if you and also that's Gavin's kids sorted as well. The you eat all the squirrels you want, even if you are allergic to nuts. So make sure you give them a good wash first. Natasha is in Kensington. Natasha, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Natasha.
It's why we touch wood. It's back when humans were tree dwelling. They used to touch the bark of trees to invoke the fairies and spirits that they believed lived there for protection.
It's not definitive, though.
Well, I read it in Otto English's book, Fake History.
Oh, that's strong. And he offers that up as a definitive answer, does he? I'm a big fan of Otto's.
He does.
Yeah, but there's other people think it's like touching the cross or something like that.
I mean, that
the cross
might
of
be
Jesus.
True
is Natasha Devon on the line?
Is it? Yeah,
this is outrageous.
Yeah.
Haven't you got enough work to do preparing for your own excellent radio programmes on LBC without infiltrating mine? Incognito.
It's my lifelong ambition
incognito.
To get on Mystery Hour,
unbelievable behaviour. All right. Well, I've got to give you a round of applause, though, but you're not getting a Ray Liotta. That'd be ridiculous. Qualifications, I read it in Fake History by Otto English, which is an excellent book. Did your dad enjoy the board game?
He did very much. Thank you. Yes.
Remind everybody when you're on LBC.
Saturdays, 7 till 9.
Outrageous. Absolutely outrageous self-promotion. It'll never catch on. Round of applause for Natasha. My friend and colleague Natasha Devon there, providing an answer that I will accept, albeit that I don't think you go definitive fully on the touchwood answer, because I'm sure in the past we've established that there are various answers, including the converse or the inverse of what Natasha said. I think there's another one that says you touch wood or you knock on wood, which is another one, so that the malevolent spirits in the wood can't hear what you're saying. So you say, oh, I hope we're all right. Oh, don't let the bad spirits hear it. I'll stop hitting the desk because someone told me yesterday it sets their dog off. Where are we going next? Is it Ben in Bradford? Ben in Bradford, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
So how do parrots pronounce certain letters, for example, P, without lips? So when we pronounce words, we use our lips to form the sound.
We do.
But parrot doesn't have lips.
But nor does a ventriloquist. Well, I mean, he does have lips, but he manages to do... I mean, it's bread and butter, isn't it, is the classic example.
Yeah.
So they can do it. A ventriloquist can do plosives. So it must be in the same way... Why would it have to be in the same way that a parrot does? I'm just pointing out it's not impossible for humans.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. Don't make that disappointed noise. It's that a ventriloquist can do all the words in the world. A good ventriloquist can do all the...
A ventriloquist has cheeks as well.
So does a parrot.
The parrot has soft cheeks.
What's cheeks got to do with anything?
Well, again, it's how you use your mouth to form the words.
Parrots and plosives, I've written down. That's what we're looking for, isn't it?
Well, I think so, yeah.
Parrots. How do parrots do plosives? How do they do any noise? I mean, really, I imagine the answer will reveal that it's got nothing to do with P's and B's, and parrots just use a completely different biological mechanism to mimic human speech from the ones that we use to actually do human speech, won't it? Don't you think?
I don't know.
It's not easier for a parrot to say really, really, really good than it is for a parrot to say Pretty Polly picked a perfect pickled pepper.
No, I've never had a parrot to ask.
Pretty Polly. We shall find out. All right, Ben, I like it. Thank you. James is in King's Cross. James, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, James.
So it's the Queen Victoria question.
Yes.
What happened was, is there was a period in time during roughly the 1870s where she was seen as being too far detached from certain parts of the empire, namely India, and Benjamin Disraeli pushed it through the House of Commons in order to make her the Empress of India, and that's basically what it was, political decision.
I know where you... Yeah, go on, I've read this, haven't I?
Of course you have. I read it because you suggested it.
I know, go on.
Satnam Sangera Empire Land. But also,
I've got to stop plugging everybody else's books on this program. I've got two of my own that are available in all good bookshops at the moment.
I've got them both, mate. But I also happen to work for the what used to be the India office, but it's now the Asia and Africa collection at the British Library. So I'm familiar with that. I'm familiar with Satnam. And I'm also familiar with Otto English's new book that I've just bought, and Natasha Devons has ruined part of it for me. So great.
Ruined part of it for you. She's tickled your fancy. She's given you a reason to read. That's lovely stuff. Qualifications galore. Round of applause for James.
Thank you, mate.
Oh, top stuff, mate. Thank you. So it was marketing in a way, wasn't it?
Much, literally. It's another three word slogan. In other words, you know, it's always been done.
Empress of India, very strong three word slogan. Yeah, because the natives might be getting a little bit restless. If you call yourself Empress of India, they'll feel a little bit more cherished and cared for. Doff cap, tug forelock, vote Empress of India. Peter is in Windsor. Peter, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Okay, so in nature. Yeah. How is it possible, or how has it become possible, for animals and insects to camouflage themselves? For example, insects which suddenly turn from their normal colour into, you know, to hide themselves in on trees, or animals which, or insects or reptiles which can change the colour to disguise themselves. How is that possible, or how has it been possible?
So you mean the chameleon-like ability to camouflage yourself, rather than how did animals evolve that look like plants and therefore can hide in a plant? You mean the ones?
Yeah,
that,
a bit of both, really.
The obvious answer is adaptation. So and evolution. So it was a genetic glitch that occurred at some long distant point in the species past, and it equipped them with something beneficial, which meant they could breed more, and the glitch got passed down to generations until all that survived were descendants of the glitched origin of the species. So that's part of the answer, but I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, at some point there must have been a tipping point where they weren't invisible or camouflaged to being camouflaged.
Yeah, and they kept getting eaten.
Exactly.
And then an uncamouflaged one gave birth to a camouflaged one. The camouflaged one didn't get eaten on anything like the scale that the uncamouflaged ones did. So they started making merry and had lots of little baby camouflaged ones. And if it really is that. I mean, it's a kind of very simplistic précis of the origin of the species. But that's how it... What's the word I'm looking for? Is it adaptation? I think it's adaptation. It's 30 years since I was at college. Crikey.
My question really is, so at one point, did the newborn insect become camouflaged?
No, they were born they were born with the ability to camouflage themselves. And it would have been like a freakish genetic glitch, but it turned out to be really useful. Do you see what I mean? In the same way that, you know, people born with things that make them much more vulnerable. These days we might call them disabilities. I mean, you couldn't escape from a predator. You could have been born with something that was the opposite. It was an extra ability, in this case, the ability to camouflage yourself, and that just gets passed down through reproduction, and you're going to reproduce more if you've got this adaptation than you are if you haven't. So eventually it becomes prevalent in the population.
Right, okay.
You'd sound unconvinced.
I'm totally unconvinced by that, sorry.
Well, what do you mean? You're unconvinced by evolution? What are you, some sort of evangelical Christian?
I'm not really convinced by that answer, but...
That's what I mean about thinking that you're not... Because how come they can change colour? You want a scientific answer to that question rather than where does the ability to change colour from?
It's not necessarily to change colour.
No, I know, but I'm using that as a figure of
like
speech.
Like a twig, for example.
Oh, well, that's just evolution.
Okay.
Of course it is. I mean, think about it. If you're an insect and you don't look like a twig and there's a bird flying past feeling hungry, who's it going to eat? The one that looks like a twig or the one that doesn't look like a twig?
Yeah, I guess so.
And your brother looks like an insect and you look like a twig, your brother's going to be dead by tea time and you're going to be out making baby twig insects.
Okay.
That's it. I'm taking it. I don't know if this one will make the second edition of the board game. We'll have to wait and see, but I'm taking a round of applause. My first of the year.
All right. Okay.
So greedy that I've even made myself late for the news with Amelia Cox.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:35 is the time you're listening to Mystery Hour, like the man said, on LBC. I am keen to crack on, but I'll remind you of what is currently on the board. We still need an answer to the question about conkers and spiders, parrots and plosives, I sense that the insect camouflage question didn't send the questioner away fully satisfied. So if you think you can add to that, feel free. But I'm keeping my round of applause. And a couple of one query on the squirrels and nuts question. Someone saying my friend has a really serious nut allergy, which can be triggered by sitting near someone who has eaten nuts. And that is, even if they ate the nuts like hours previously, that's not a refutation of the, once the protein in the nut has been broken down into amino acids. So if it's still in their mouth and on their breath, it could still trigger an allergy. But if it has been eaten, and then you eat the person that ate it, this has all gone a little bit weird, hasn't it, for 25 to 1 on a Thursday afternoon. If you were to eat the person that had eaten the nut, and it had been, you know, slaughtered hygienically, look, you work it out. I can't do everything for you. Two phone lines free, if you're quick, if you've got a question or if you can answer. How do parrots speak? Or how do they mimic human speech? And the Conkers and Spiders one. But we've actually got time for more questions as well. Kate is in Wivelsfield Green in Sussex. Kate, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
OK, so why do we have the urge to squeeze cute things like kittens or the chubby bits of babies' legs?
Squeeze? Would you go around squeezing kittens?
Well, you don't do it, but you've got the urge. You want to give them want to squeeze them. So you know what, the chubby parts of a baby's leg, you know, that nice squeezy bit?
Sort of.
Have you never had that feeling where you want to give them a squeeze?
Well, I'm at the other end of the telescope. I'm one of those cute things that everybody else wants to squeeze, Kate.
I'm sure you are.
Is it things that we would normally cuddle, but they're too small to cuddle, so we kind of subconsciously translate...
Well, for me personally and a few other people that I know, it's more of a squeeze. Sometimes even like a bit of a bite.
Really? What? You bite kittens?
I never do it.
Oh, I know. I do sort of know what you mean, but I'm going to be amazed if you get an answer, because you're looking for an... I don't know what it would be. Psychological? Evolutionary? Why do we get an urge to squeeze cute things? No, I like it a lot. What's the last thing you squeezed? What's the last thing you squeezed, Kate? Remember, it's a family program.
I've got a little mini schnauzer. Sometimes I get hold of a bit of his back legs and give them a squeeze because they're quite chubby.
That's quite sweet. I don't know if I do feel this in the way that you do, because I've got a cute little dog as well, and I'll give her a lovely cuddle and I'll ruffle her. But I don't have an actual urge to squeeze any specific limbs.
Next time she's running away from you or in front of you, watch her little back legs and. You might feel the urge then to give him a squeeze.
Oh, well, I'll let you know. I'll report back. Thank you, Kate. Why do we get an urge to squeeze cute things? 12:38 is the time. All human life is here. Russell's in Bridge End. Russell, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question. In regard to your previous person, yes. I squeeze my cat.
Do you?
What
do we mean by squeeze then? Maybe I do squeeze.
Usually,
I've got several.
It usually ends with me bleeding, but.
Because the cat will give you a scratch back. You're so cute! My daughter, one of my daughters does that with the cat, actually.
Yeah, you can't help yourself. They're looking cute. You give them a squeeze, and then they bite you.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's nature red in tooth and claw. What did you ring in with?
I listen to your show every Wednesday at 12 o'clock and listen to Prime Minister's Questions.
What will you do if we drop it? How will you feel if we drop it?
I'd be livid.
Livid?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would be livid. Yeah. It just feels as though the Prime Minister knows the questions are coming up, and I just wanted to know whether... The Prime Minister knows the questions he's going to be asked.
Cool. No, he doesn't.
In which case, I find it incredibly unfair.
No, he doesn't know the questions in advance, but they spend and they do quite a lot of modelling. What's the word? Modelling or hot housing or whatever. Preparing, even, if I was being a bit less pretentious. They do quite a lot of preparing, trying to work out what the questions will be. And I think Michael Gove normally plays the role, or certainly back in the day, under David Cameron, Michael Gove would play the role of... Ed Miliband, and they'd rehearse it. Rehearse is the word I was flipping looking for. They'd rehearse it like that. You can usually, because you hear me and Theo pontificating about what questions are likely to come up, and just because Theo almost always gets it completely wrong doesn't mean that the government and the Prime Minister would get it completely wrong when they try and guess what questions are going to come up. So they've got an edge.
Boris seems to nail it every time.
Who does?
I, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister.
Have you been watching the same PMQs? What do you mean he seems to nail it every time?
By saying, I think what the public really want to know is nothing to do with
your question. Oh, he's prepared that answer. He's prepared that answer in advance, but you've just established yourself. It doesn't matter what the question is if he's going to spin that spiel.
Yeah, and that's the annoying thing. Why can't he be enforced to answer the question?
That's not what you asked. That's not what you asked, Russell. I'm afraid I'm laying down the law on this one. I'm taking another round of applause. The simple answer to your question is no, he doesn't know the questions beforehand. And the slightly more developed answer is they usually make an educated guess that is right more often than it's wrong, because it is usually quite obvious. It's why the early days of Jeremy Corbyn were surprisingly effective, because he would ask those questions that had come from... Do you remember from Russell in Bridgend wants to know why ... And that did kind of take them by surprise for a while. That did put Cameron on the back foot, but they soon readjusted and responded. So I'll take a round of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll also answer your second question. The Speaker can't. I mean, he can intervene a bit, but it's not like school. It's the Prime Minister. The Speaker can't say, I insist that you answer the question. Leader of the Opposition should do more of it. Ellie's in Jerusalem. Ellie, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
I want to know why I'm involved. I know politics from three different countries in the world. And
yes.
Why in all countries in the world is the Conservatives called the right,
yes,
and Labour or the Democrats called the left.
Yes. But you want to know why?
And why is one of them right and one of them left?
It's
is it that way around?
It's post-revolutionary France, isn't it? Isn't it the where they sat in the first French Parliament after they'd got rid of the royal family.
So we all follow the French?
I think so.
What do you think?
I think so, yeah.
Don't know how I feel about that answer.
Well, what do you mean you don't know how you feel about that answer? It's not about what you think about the French. It was definitely that. I'm trying to remember which way around it was. I think it was the aristocrats that were left over would be to the right of the speaker's chair, and the new sort of tribunes or whatever they were called, the deputies, be the third estate. They'd be to the left of the... So the first estate is the monarchy, the second estate is the aristocracy, the third estate is the people, the tribunes of the people, the fourth estate is the media, traditionally. So the speaker, or whatever it was called in the French Parliament, would have the nobility, the aristocrats on his right, and the Robespierre lot on his left, and that's where it comes from.
Wow, interesting.
It is, isn't it? Round of applause for me. Right, so it's a very good question. I'm 99% sure I got the answer right, but there might be the scintilla of chance for a whatchamacallit there, the steward's inquiry. Dylan is in Westbury. Dylan, question or answer?
I've got a question, please.
Carry on.
So I was wondering, why is it that the English Channel is called the English Channel and not the French?
Well, the French don't call it the English Channel.
Do they not?
No, they call it La Manche, I think.
Ah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, because on all maps it says the English Channel.
How many of the maps have you looked at are French?
Well, actually, I don't know. I've never really looked at French maps.
No, I don't know what La Manche actually means. I think it's part of Normandy, but it is the French call what we call the English Channel, the French call La Manche.
Ah, okay.
And does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so.
I do too. Tell me ask me what my qualifications are.
What are your qualities?
Genius.
Ah.
Merci.
I consider myself a genius, but I do French at school, and I have no idea what La Manche means.
Oh, well, I might. Not Manche, that's eat. Manche, M-A-N-C-H-E, La Manche. La Manche, mon ami, La Manche. Allons-y à La Manche. Pour un petit... What's French for swim, Dylan?
I have absolutely no idea.
Well, I thought you were studying French at school.
I've just started it.
All right.
When I chose my GCSE.
How old are you?
I'm 16, but I lived in Malta and I did Italian for the whole time I was there.
All right, what's Italian for swim then? Stop bullying teenagers, O'Brien. This is ridiculous behaviour. So anyway, the answer to your question is all the maps you've looked at are English maps, and if you looked at a French map, it would say La Manche. Round of applause for me. Thank you, Dylan. Take care. Good luck with those GCSEs. 12:45 is the time, or A-levels now, if you see. No, 16, just 16. You'll be doing your GCSEs in the summer. Jeff's in Bagshot. We'll come to him after this break.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 12:49. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. Stephen's in Montpellier. Stephen, question or answer? Oh, dear. I just spoke French.
Do you want bonne année de toute façon? A correction, please.
D'accord.
La Manche is after the shape of the English Channel. La Manche means a sleeve.
Yes.
Not like where you put your arm. Voilà.
No, it's not a correction. It's a clarification.
Yes, clarification, sorry.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is called La Manche by the French.
Yes.
But it translates as the sleeve because of the shape of the body of water on
that's
the
right, map, exactly.
Qualifications?
I am French.
Round of applause for Steve.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That was beautifully handled. Qualifications. I'm French. What else would it be? Jeff's in Bagshot. Jeff, question or answer?
Happy New Year. It's an answer, I should say.
Yes.
Spiders and conkers.
Yes.
Spiders are not repelled by whatever chemical conkers may give off. It's a myth.
I thought so.
And you know where I got this from?
Okay, oh, I don't know.
I got this from a quiz game that I got for Christmas called James O'Brien. I said to your researcher, surely all these answers are plastered all over the office wall, aren't they?
So Adrian at Shells, as we know him very fondly, he's public enemy number one in some corners of the country because he's the bloke that made all those viral clips go viral. He was responsible for that huge upsurge in the popularity of the programme. But he also, as a fellow Mystery Hour aficionado, he wrote the cards. He wrote all the questions and the answers. And he got in touch over New Year to say, obviously, he's unbeatable. He's just struggling to find people to play it with who don't know that he wrote all the cards and the questions. So he's completely unbeatable. But I've got the opposite problem. I remember the convincing wrong answers and think that they're the right answers. So yeah. Does it say on the card there's a noxious gas released by the conkers?
Yeah, I mean, I'm walking the dog, so I don't have a copy of it.
No, that's fine. I'm not going to mark your homework.
We did it like two or three nights ago, and I was convinced that, yeah, they were repelled by it, but actually the answer is no.
It's all a load of conkers. Round of applause for Jeff. You'd think if there was one game, the one that's got my own flipping face on the box, I'd be quite well qualified to, but no. By the way, of course, I should have mentioned, if you're wondering what we're talking about or what all the fuss is about or what joys were visited upon us by this game over Christmas, you can order yours at mysteryhour.co.uk to get it directly and in various other online retail, well, the most obvious online retailer, I suppose, being Amazon. But it is going to be in shops this year as well. That was some rather good news we got before the Christmas period. Some household name retailers will be stocking it in the coming year. So there's no reason not to join in. Ed's in Edgware. Ed, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
Well, more of an elaboration, really, on the PMQ's question.
Oh, yeah.
Which you so generously gave yourself a round of applause for.
It wasn't generous. It was justice. It was natural justice. Come on, then. So is this a steward's inquiry on one of my answers?
Well, the PM. F1 will be gone for weeks if we start that. The PM knows about half of the questions.
He meant the leader of the opposition's questions, not the MP's questions that come after.
Okay. I thought you sort of gave a sense that the PM seemed to know what the questions were in advance, not necessarily just the leader of the opposition.
I'm 52% sure that it was a question about the it's the infernal ratio.
Well,
because he said then he goes off and answers it regardless, because the question evolved. He was then trying to ask why doesn't the speaker force him to actually answer the question that he was asked. So I'm 52%, I'm actually 90% sure it was a question about the leader of the opposition's questions rather than the ones. The other ones are staged. But anyway, what are your qualifications? Because
I used to work for an MP, and the whip's office would be in advance telling us what questions to ask.
So to submit the question. Oh, ask him about this one, will you? Now, known in the trade as an open goal, really, isn't it? It's a kind of...
And it's what MPs will ask, a version of the question they're asked, and at the end shoehorn something about their own constituency.
Does the Prime Minister agree with me that the national anthem should be played at the end of all broadcasting by James O'Brien on LBC? And does he also agree with me that the good people of Basingstoke...
Exactly.
That kind of thing. I'll give you a round of applause for being a good egg, but I'm not. You're not having mine. 12:54 is the time. Why do you squeeze cute things? And the parrots, how do parrots mimic human speech? Do we know? It might be one of the great mysteries of the universe, but there's still time for you to answer it. How do parrots mimic human speech? And why do we squeeze cute things? That's all I've got left, I think. The insect camouflage question, I think I answered it. But if you think I didn't, and I suspect the questioner thought I didn't, then feel free to tell me what I got wrong. James is in Dunoon in Scotland. James, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So the urge to bite, squeeze or pinch cute things is known as cute aggression.
Shut
or playful
up.
Aggression.
Shut the front door. Are you serious? Call what? Cute aggression. Cute aggression or what? Cute. What was the second bit?
Playful aggression.
Playful aggression. So it's like kittens and my... Would you believe my dog and our new cat are best mates? And they're always wrestling with each other, but they never have their claws or their teeth out. So that would be cute aggression as well.
Yeah. In humans, it's so we can perpetuate the species in that we have to give care to young. And so we have this mechanism in our brain that says, oh, we have to take care of this. But if it's so cute that we're debilitated and can't function in life, that's detrimental. So we have this aggression to break that that urge of cuteness.
So a primeval urge to squeeze a cute thing to overcome the paralysis of cuteness, as it were.
Exactly, yeah.
What are your qualifications?
I took child and adolescent development in uni.
Really? And that's an actual thing in a textbook, cute aggression?
Yeah, it's so you know how to manage a classroom without getting overwhelmed.
I think that's a lovely answer. And I did not expect Kate, I think it was Kate that asked the question, wasn't it, to get a proper answer. But never mind an academic-sounding one. James, have a round of applause on me.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Cute aggression, that's what overcomes Sheila Fogarty every time she walks into the studio at 5 minutes.
I always give you a little squeeze, don't I? Because in the news bulletin. Don't tell anyone.
What about your New Year's resolution? Professor Hal is here. Professor Hal, why are you here? What have we done to rattle your cage?
Well, you invited us to feel free to tell you what you got wrong.
That's a permanent feature of this programme, Hal.
No, can I just underpin what you got right? Because you were kind of saying without saying that evolution is not driven by purpose. Evolution is a series of chances causing mutations. So the chance that an insect looks a bit more camouflaged means it's likelier to reproduce and not get eaten. But the other point that we could underpin it with is that nature gives with one hand and takes with the other. Some mutations which cause harm, such as the sickle cell trait, also cause benefit, because sickle cell anemia also allows the in quote sufferer to have a immunity towards malaria.
Is that right?
Yeah, it is, and which is why it sort of gives with one hand and takes with the other. So
mutation was the word I was looking for instead of adaptation, wasn't it?
Yes, and it's the same with the giraffes with the longer necks. The ones with the longer necks could reach the higher leaves, were better fed, and therefore pass that mutation on to their offspring.
Until eventually, millions of years later, or millennia later, every member of that species has the mutation, and it is no longer a mutation, it's normal.
Yes, so evolution doesn't design. It's not a sort of a grand
And that would apply to changing colour as well. The species that, like a chameleon, there would have been a ancestor that couldn't change colour, and then there was a mutation that involved this bizarre ability to blend into the background, and that obviously was of immense, I mean, almost invaluable in the context of avoiding predation.
Yeah. The pepper moths went black and then they went white.
I love that story. In Manchester.
Yes, because of the
industrial revolution.
Yeah.
All the pollution and stuff like that. So they'd get eaten when they were white because they'd stand out against a black background, and then they went black and they'd blend into the black background because of all the pollution on the black background. Then they went white again when things cleaned up a bit. Is that
exactly right?
You're very good. Qualifications?
I'm a lucky guy because I'm the Professor of Public Understanding of Science at the University of Brighton.
You're also a TV star.
I'm not a star, Z-list.
You're a star, man. I'm Z-list. You're a star, man. Would you honestly, hand on heart, and apologies if I've asked you this question already, do you think that the television executives would have come knocking if it wasn't for Mystery Hour, if it wasn't for your celebrity status established?
No, it's one of the first questions they would have asked.
There you go, you see. So you could start off ringing into Mystery Hour, albeit as a professor of the public understanding of science at the University of Brighton. And the next thing you know, you'd be starring in Howe, as Professor Howe. Professor Howe. Professor Howe.
Dr. Howe.
Dr. Howe. Professor Howe is Dr. Howe.
That's exactly right.
Happy New Year, mate. I'll see you soon, I hope.
And you. Thanks, James.
And that's it for another day. Here is the nation's most famous sufferer of cute aggression, Sheila Fogarty.
And sometimes just aggression. I've sent you an article on cute aggression that I was reading in the last 2 minutes. It's
very
serious?
Nice. I will. I should read it.
I'll give you a squeeze in a minute, James. Don't you worry.
Stop it.